Welcome back to the Reformanda Initiative podcast. We are here as usual to analyze and discuss Roman Catholic theology from an evangelical perspective. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Before we carry on today, I wanted to mention one of our partners. That's Union School of Theology. Union School of Theology exists to form men and women to grow Christ's church. They offer degrees from a Bachelor of Arts to PhD in order to shape students to be theologically rigorous, biblically faithful, and Christ-like. And they do so much more than that. They also foster church growth through people and finances by facilitating the planting and revitalization of churches and their ministries worldwide. We have benefited from Union's mission. So if you'd like to find out more, I would encourage you to visit their website, www.union-mission.org. And from there, you'll find a link to their programs, their ministries, and their training solutions. Additionally, I wanted to mention to all of our listeners that you also have an opportunity to support the work that we are doing here as the Reformanda Initiative. We say we exist to unite, equip, and resource the church to identify and understand Roman Catholic theology and practice. We want to educate the evangelical church so that we can communicate the biblical gospel. We appreciate your partnership with us. And if you would like to partner with us through a financial donation, you can do that now on our website, www.reformandainitiative.org. We are registered in the United States as a 501c3 nonprofit organization. And so that means for some of our donors that that donation can be a tax deductible donation. So if you'd like to partner with us financially, we would definitely appreciate your help and your partnership in ministry. All right, so what are we going to talk about today, Reed?
Well, today we're going to discuss an interesting topic that really, I guess we could have discussed a while ago, but through this online mentoring program that the Reformanda Initiative is offering that you can find more information about on our website that Clay just mentioned. You know, with COVID and the reality of people not being able to travel, we've had to be creative and how we offer our training. And so Leo had this idea of doing this year-round mentoring program that's very much like our Rome Scholars and Leaders Network that we have each year. And it's about 10 to 12 people. I think we had, how many do we have this going currently?
15.
So saw some good results immediately. But in this first session that Leo led recently, one thing that he provided was a theological definition of Roman Catholicism. And we were listening and reading about it. It's really an interesting concept when you think about it. If we asked anyone or our listeners, how would you define Roman Catholicism? It would require a pause for thinking, you know, like, well, how would I define Roman Catholicism? And you can say the same about anything. How would you define evangelicalism? So it's an important question, and the way that we answer that question reveals a lot about what we think about a certain topic. So in this case, obviously, how we would define Roman Catholicism reveals a lot about our understanding of it and how we think about it, theologically speaking. So we thought today that we would discuss this very question. How do you define Roman Catholicism? And before we get started, we're not by any means suggesting the definition for Roman Catholicism, but Leo and his vast experience, a lot of travel, a lot of seminars, a lot of conferences, has had a lot of time to think through it and provide his own definition. So we will use that today just to guide our conversation, and you can use it however you like. But it's also just to encourage our listeners to think about that question. How would you define and how should we define Roman Catholicism, theologically speaking? And before we'll dive into that just momentarily, we thought we would, you know, our last episode, we discussed the new encyclical from Pope Francis, which is called Fratelli Tutti, you know, we're all brothers, an encyclical that's extremely long, not a whole lot of theological content until you get towards the end, but certainly the message is clear that we're all brothers and sisters based on our being creatures of God, you know, our humanity, and that's what binds us together, and the hope for peace in the world is us recognizing that. Otherwise, that peace becomes difficult. And then, you know, it's been a busy week in the Catholic Church. There's been a lot of news coming out of the Vatican that I guess, are what we would expect after an encyclical such as Fratelli Tutti. But Leo, what would you, could you summarize just the news, this recent news this week with...
Well, there were comments taken from an interview given by the Pope and put in a movie about the Pope recognizing the need for civil unions in the state legislations and therefore endorsing the view that it is right that the state recognizes same-sex couples, but that is just one side of the point that came out. The main point was the reiteration of what Pope Francis has been saying since his election, that we're all children of God. We, regardless our gender, felt identity, we are all children of God, loved of God. God made us this way. So just the reinforcement of this point that God's grace embraces us wherever we are, whoever we are, regardless of our sin. There is no talking about sin. And so just reinforcing what he has been consistently saying since the beginning of his pontificate. And then there has been the creation of new cardinals that will be appointed by the end of November, which is another move towards shaping the next conclave, the next election of the Pope. And so all of the, I think, 9 new electing voters are people who endorse Francis's vision and agenda. And therefore, now the cardinals that were appointed by Pope Francis are the majority of the next conclave. And so that perhaps is an indication that he is more and more shaping the decision that the conclave is will have to make after his years are over.
Yeah, it's definitely something to take into consideration. Something that it's easy to overlook or not understand the importance of the election or nomination of cardinals, and it's for this very reason. It's very political in a sense that you know, putting people who in that office who will vote on the next pope, and certainly they will vote on a pope that will promulgate their theological convictions, whatever they may be. So that's very important, and important to keep an eye on. And a lot of the developments, certainly about civil unions, is something that we wouldn't even expect after an encyclical such as Fratelli Tutti. So things to keep an eye on, because they have wide implications, I suppose. But anyway, let's go back to our discussion for today, and that is defining Roman Catholicism, at least from an evangelical perspective, and considering how we would do that. So what I'll do now is I'll just read this definition that Leo had put together for this mentoring program and for other conferences and meetings he had been to, and then we'll kind of break it down. It's a very theological definition, because we are talking about the theology of Roman Catholicism. So for that reason, we'll break down each sentence and walk through it and interact with it. So the definition is this. It says, Roman Catholicism is a deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries by clustering around an imperial institution, centering on its sacramental system, grounding itself on its synergistic theology and abnormal ecclesiology, and being fueled by its universal Catholic project of embracing the whole world. Let me just read it one more time. Roman Catholicism is a deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries by clustering around an imperial Roman institution, centering on its sacramental system, grounding itself on its synergistic theology and abnormal ecclesiology, and being fueled by its universal Catholic project of embracing the whole world. So that's a mouthful, obviously.
Yeah.
And for that reason, we want to walk through it and break it down. And in the notes of this episode on the website, we'll provide this definition so you can actually see it if it ever be helpful for you. But let's just start with the first statement here. It says Roman Catholicism is a deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries. Leo, just help us walk through that first line. It's obviously a loaded statement.
Yeah, very loaded statement, and each sentence would need careful expounding. And but in a nutshell, we all have an understanding of Christianity being a diverse movement. There is no such a thing as a monolithic Christianity. From the New Testament, from the early communities, there were emphases, differences, nuances. And even historically speaking, the church has always been diverse in itself. But when we talk about Catholicism, we're not talking about yet another legitimate, biblically legitimate form of Christianity. We're talking about a deviation. We're talking about something that is moving off mainstream Christianity. So not yet another Christian denomination. We have, different streams within Christianity, the Baptist stream, the Presbyterian stream, the Independent stream, and many others. And in a way, Christianity needs to recognize its own diversity, inner diversity, in the unity in the gospel. But talking about Catholicism, we're talking about something different. We're talking about something that went off track. Now, this is not ecumenically friendly in many ways, but it is important that we do not make the confusion of associating Catholicism as being yet another legitimate diverse form of Christianity. It is not. It is something different. And why? Because of its claims, not because of something that we superimpose on Catholicism by way of judging negatively, harshly, prejudicially Catholicism. It is because of what Catholicism stands for and claims for itself that makes it what it is, that is a deviation from biblical Christianity. And it developed over, consolidated over the centuries, because there is no birth date of Roman Catholicism. There is no date, precise date. It was a process made of different steps leading towards the consolidation, the solidifying of this system. And so it is difficult to pinpoint the exact date of birth of Catholicism. It was a process. Constantine, post-Constantinian history, the rise of the papacy, the growth of Marian spirituality, and then the tightening of a papal of the papal office, the strengthening of the sacramental system, the development of non-biblical piety, all this put together in a coherent, solidified system. It took centuries. Having said that, the deviation from biblical Christianity basically emerged out of the embracement of the imperial Roman ancient institution and ideology.
So that's the first part of the definition. Roman Catholicism is a deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries. And then, Leo, you had just begun into the second part where you mentioned that this has been consolidated over the centuries by clustering around an imperial Roman institution, centering on its sacramental system.
Could you? Yeah. I think it is historically accurate to say that the structures, the institutions of the Catholic Church emerged out of the absorption of imperial structures, those of the Roman Empire. For example, the rise of the papacy, this pyramidal triangular structure clearly resembles the structure of the empire, not the teaching of the Bible. Of course, the Bible speaks about the exercise of authority in the church, but never speaks of it in imperial terms or in absolute terms, as it is the case with the claims of the papacy, which are imperial claims. And and because of the self definition of the church centered around this imperial structure, the sacramental system was used as a way to affirm the power of the church, to channel God's grace, to grant, to administer God's grace, to give out God's grace. And so making the this powerful imperial ecclesiastical structure being given the role of mediating between God and humanity, and channeling through the grace of God through by the way of the seven sacraments. So these are elements that contributed significantly to the shaping of the Catholic Church as she understands itself, and she claims what she thinks of herself.
And Leo, could you quickly give some examples on how the imperial Roman institutional structure is mirrored between the ancient Roman Empire and the structure within the Roman Catholic Church?
Yeah. I mean, the conception of having a pope, a king pope, an emperor, is clearly depends on an imperial understanding of authority. Never in the Bible we are told that the church needs an emperor to be governed, to be led. It always talks about a plural eldership, plurality of leaders, and with limited authority, spiritual authority, not political authority, not authority that comes from power, money, affluence, no. Whereas the Pope, the papacy, actually, the office of the Pope arose out of the copying of the claims of the emperor. And then that was only the top of the structure, but below the Pope, the Catholic Church created this view of bishops being performing the role of senators in the ancient Rome. So forming a college of advisors and leaders below the authority of the Pope, and yet being distinct from the rest of the people. And then the view of the clergy being a sacrament separated from that of simple, ordinary Christians is yet another instance in which the Catholic Church absorbed a view of ministry that resembled a political role rather than a spiritual role. And then at the bottom of the imperial structure, there were the slaves, those without any rights. And in the Catholic absorption of that picture, you have the lay people, the ordinary Christians that cannot, that depend on the clergy for their spiritual life, to receive the sacraments, to receive teaching, to receive, to be governed. They cannot express themselves apart from saying yes and passively following the authority, and they deal with the secular issues, the earthly mundane issues, which are considered of a secondary, less important nature.
Okay.
So you see this pyramidal structure mirrored in the church's structure.
We can even point to that in the fact that the Pope has the titles that once belonged to the emperor.
Yeah, yeah. These titles do not arise from biblical titles. I mean, they are also added to some biblical titles, but the imperial titles became paramount in defining the office of the papacy.
Okay.
Yeah, so going back to our definition, which is these explanations are helping it come to life and make a lot of sense to aspects of Catholicism that we may never have taken the time to really think about or and to explore why they are the way they are. So you have this deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries. It's taken a long time. It didn't happen overnight for sure. That clusters itself around this imperial Roman institution that reflects more the Roman Empire as opposed to the biblical example we have. Of course, as Leo said, not that the biblical example does not encourage authority in the church. Certainly it does, but it's in a very different way than the Roman Catholicism and the Roman Catholic Church formed over the centuries, centering on the sacramental system that affirms the church's ability to administer God's grace on behalf of God to the people.
Yeah.
Then we get into the next aspect of this definition, perhaps one of the more theologically loaded aspects of it. So this sacramental system, which is grounded itself on its synergistic theology and abnormal ecclesiology. So what does that mean exactly? Can we define synergistic for our listeners? And so what is the synergistic theology and the abnormal ecclesiology?
Well, we in past episodes of our podcast, we talked about the two pillars mm-hmm. of the Roman Catholic theological system being the nature-grace interrelationship and the Christ-Church interconnection. And this is another way of basically saying the same thing. That is, the theological grounding of the system is based on these two pillars. A synergistic theology means that a positive view of nature, tainted by sin but not disqualified in order to receive God's grace and contributing to it in order to achieve the supernatural end. And so this optimistic view of man and man's capabilities in receiving, cooperating, partnering, contributing to his own salvation, and this positive view of nature, reality, society, the world, to embrace God's grace. And the whole consequences that are derived from this understanding of the relationship between nature and grace. And then coupled to that is this abnormal ecclesiology, this view of the church that has been inflated, has become outsized, and with strong claims about the nature of the church being indefectible, being perfect society, being never making mistakes, being infallible, having the role of teaching new truths, and being the voice of God's revelation, and so on and so forth, and being the guardian, the gatekeeper of the what God does in the world. And so these two pillars have become the theological foundations for the whole of Catholic theology and practice. And they have consolidated over the years, and they have become the structure, the theological infrastructure of all then the Catholic Church is teaching and doing.
If you want to listen to us unpack these pillars of the Roman Catholic theological system, you can go back and listen to episodes 2 through 4, where we have an episode on understanding Roman Catholic theology, and then we have an episode each dedicated, one to the nature grace interrelationship and the other to the Christ Church interconnection. And then if you really want to dig deep, we would encourage our listeners to pick up Greg Allison's book, Roman Catholic theology and evangelical perspective. So,
yeah. So when you, just to review this aspect of the definition, when we're talking about this whole Roman Catholicism being grounded on this synergistic theology, when by synergistic, you mean an overly optimistic theology that comes from this idea of what happened in the Garden of Eden when sin entered into this world and devastated humanity, and then that grace, the nature grace interaction. So we're just talking about an overly optimistic theology,
which is the ground for assuming that we are capable of contributing.
Right.
That's the meaning of synergistic energy working soon together with. And so God works with us in order to save us.
Right.
So
okay.
he gives us his grace, but we need to work out our own salvation in a way that assumes that we are capable of contributing to it and not only responding, but actually
participating
in
having a role to play.
Yeah.
So that would be more accurate to this term, the synergistic. Yes, it is an overly optimistic theology, but the synergistic aspect of it comes in the fact that it's a kind of, we play a part as does God in this symbiotic relationship, which of course goes against the teachings of the reformers. And that's what the Reformation was all about in this aspect of it. It's not synergistic. It's God alone who saves us through Christ alone, through grace alone.
Because sin has introduced a radical breach. The fall has been radical. It has not been a sickness. It has not introduced a form of not being well. We are dead in our sins. And unless God regenerates us, literally, we are dead. Whereas in the Catholic understanding, sin is given a less radical role. We are weakened by sin. We are less capable of responding. But still, there is a residual and effectual ability to interact with God and to cooperate with His grace. So that that difference makes a whole world of difference when it comes to then salvation, church, and so on.
And so you have that synergistic theology accompanied by this abnormal ecclesiology, or a very overinflated idea of the church of itself and what it proposes and claims to be, of course, with the Christ church interconnection with the church speaking on behalf of Christ and representing the continuous incarnation of Christ in this world, which of course is a very inflated view of itself. So all that together causes it also to be a deviation from the biblical Christianity, as we said at the beginning. So the last part of the definition is that it is being fueled, this entire theological system is being fueled by its universal Catholic project of embracing the whole world.
Yeah, that's also a very foundational aspect of Catholicism, that goes back to this word Catholic, universal, which is can be understood in a biblical sense, but in the Catholic, Roman Catholic understanding, the Catholicity of the Church has to do with this view of the Church being the agent representing the whole world, embracing the whole world, and being the sign and instrument of God's grace to the whole of humankind. And so there is this view that it is not gospel Catholicity that is the fact that we are one in Christ according to the gospel. It is the fact that the whole of humanity needs to be taken back to the structure of the Roman Catholic Church, and so it's a global project. It's not something that has to do with, you know, one particular region or continent, but it's a universal And the Catholic Church claims universal prerogatives, the Pope being the chief of the universal church, and being the church, consider being the church, the self-understanding of the church being that of a sign of instrument of the unity of humankind. These are also claims that extend beyond the visible boundaries of the Roman Catholic Church. There are claims that embrace the whole of humanity. And so, given the fact that there are still the Roman Catholic Church is still centered on a political system derived from the Roman Empire, this is makes it unique and makes it a deviation, to go back to the first affirmation. It's not the biblical church nominated or denominated in a specific way, which is biblically legitimate, but because of all this weight that the Catholic Church has accumulated over the years and the centuries, and putting them, giving them theological weight and importance, the result is a deviation from the gospel. Retaining, you know, the words, some words of the gospel, some gospel language, but redefining them in terms of the purpose, the vision, the foundation of the system itself.
So here's that definition again. Roman Catholicism is a deviation from biblical Christianity that has consolidated over the centuries by clustering around an imperial Roman institution, centering on its sacramental system, grounding itself on its synergistic theology and abnormal ecclesiology, and being fueled by its universal Catholic project of embracing the world. We read that at the beginning of the episode. Hopefully it is still a mouthful, but hopefully now, after kind of unpacking each sentence, it makes a lot more sense. But how would you define Roman Catholicism? Again, those implications are important for how we think through anything, but certainly what we believe in or the faith we profess. So hopefully that was helpful, some food for thought at least, and thinking through the definition and the details of Roman Catholicism and what it is and how we think about it. So thank you, Leo, for unpacking that for us. And hopefully you, the listener, found that helpful.
Yeah. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. We would encourage you to make sure you subscribe to the podcast if you have not already. Share it with your friends. Follow us on social media, on Twitter at Reformanda Rome, on Facebook at Reformanda Initiative. Again, thank you for your support and following us and sharing our content. The Lord's been good to this podcast project. We have surpassed over 20,000 downloads, and we're encouraged to see what the Lord would do, continue to do through this podcast. So if you have any questions, as usual, send us a message. We would love to respond to you. Until next time, from Rome, God bless.